Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
What's happening, ladies of the roundtable?
Hello.
Oh, my microphone smells like disinfectant.
Yeah, because Tamron, by the way, hello Tamron Jardine, hello Stevie French, hello Cersei.
Hello.
So Tamron, you were moaning about the microphone shield having lipstick on it. And I don't know how lipstick got onto your microphone pop shield
thing. I think
someone
was kissing the mic.
Oh my lord.
That sex show do crazy things.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. What day are they usually?
So, yeah, they're on a Friday, so you never know.
So for those of you at home who've never been in a radio studio and who've never been on a microphone, the trick they teach you at radio school is that, you know, kind of how surfers will put their pinky out and their thumb out and they'll go like, yeah buddy, so that's the kind of distance you want to have between like your microphone and your mouth. I'm sure Ari knows this, but like,
I actually don't.
I'm practicing. I'm like, yeah,
I thought it was a fist. I was always told it was a fist, so I don't know.
Well,
okay.
Anyway, so you do that, and like I'm like getting high right now on fumes from my microphone.
I said to you, be careful how much you spray it, and you did.
Like, but you passed it around as if it was like hand sanitizer, and I'm like, sure, I don't want germs in my life.
I'm also going to spray
my microphone foam head.
So on that disinfectant goes, and good luck to Stevie French over the next 30 minutes as she.
I actually like the way it
plateaus.
Smells.
Conversation is going to get interesting.
This is one of those petrol ones.
Yeah.
Like at the petrol station going.
I was about to say.
I'm like, yeah.
We're so bad at this game because we really do have a content strategy and we have all sorts of things we want to talk to you about. But first, I want to ask a question. Well, first, it's going to start with a bit of an admission on my own part.
Yeah.
And then I will pass the question to the floor. What are the weird things that you like to smell/eat when you were a child? Mine was chalk.
That's so disgusting.
I'd steal it from the desk, from the board, but only the dust-free one, because that one is a little bit fine. Mm, delish. To the floor.
Sure,
I must admit, mine wasn't that crazy.
What was it?
I liked soil. Like
soil?
Yeah.
Sand?
No, soil, like proper red soil. Like after it rains, I go to the garden and then I dig the soil and I eat it.
It's a similar thing to the chalk
really?
Thing. Gotcha.
It's
you and me, girl.
So delicious.
Yep. Tamron?
I think I ate food, eh?
Yeah, I'm also trying to think.
Like,
what did I really eat that I shouldn't have as a kid? I do have a funny story, though. A friend of mine, she once walked in on her little brother who had taken his nappy off and was eating the shit out of the nappy.
Ew! That is so disgusting. So,
Samantha does that sometimes.
Samantha Martin, yes.
Yeah, she'll but it's weird. Like, she won't eat her poop, but like she'll bring some of it back inside.
This is your dog, though, just so everyone's clear. Yeah.
Who doesn't know Samantha Martin
All
by now?
All dogs eat their own shit, though. I don't know why. And sometimes they eat other dogs' shit as like a sign of authority.
Duck poo.
It's weird.
Goose poo.
My dog does not eat leftovers. My dogs are not like that at all. They are
Tamron, because your dogs are perfect, just like you.
We know. Aristocratic dogs.
Well, hey, listen. Speaking of dogs, Stevie, you like to take the dog walking every now and then.
Okay, I do.
And an incident happened the other day.
Well, it doesn't. It didn't happen the other day. It happens all the time.
Okay.
People think that it's okay to just feed other people's dogs. Mm. And so I put this out up on a poll on Twitter at Stevie French SA, and I asked people, would you feed a dog that wasn't yours? And obviously there's not enough, there aren't enough characters within a Twitter poll to get my point across. And so people were like, oh, random acts of kindness. Of course I would feed a dog that wasn't mine. Yay, passing it on, paying it forward. And I'm like, no, but don't feed my dog, okay? Because you'll be walking around and people will just be like, oh, can they have a treat? And it's like, what treats are you giving your dog? Like, my dog has never had your treat. And then on a Saturday when loads of people are having picnics and things, Samantha will go up to people and they'll be super keen to meet her and stroke her and stuff. But then they'll feed her whatever they're eating, like a chip or a piece of cheese, which I'm not, I used to be pedantic about, but now I don't mind. But then obviously, she's not going to want to come with me. She's going to want to hang around on your cheesy picnic basket, blanket. And then I feel like an asshole because my dog, won't leave you alone. And it's like, dude, boundary.
For me, it's not even about that. Like, what if they choose to feed your dog something they are maybe like allergic to? You know what I mean?
Well, we're not even going there.
Yeah.
Because dietary requirements.
Yeah. Because I mean, like some dogs are really, really pedantic about what they eat or how they live their lifestyles or whatever. But now, 10 minutes going on.
I'm just like, my dogs have the, like, they won't eat, like, I can't explain it. They're such stuffing brats that if someone feeds them food, like, you know, the
vet, like, no,
when they give them treats, my dogs are like,
they're not interested. They give that nose up.
Where is my liver pate?
Well, Samantha's a nice dog, okay? Samantha's not a snob, okay?
Yeah, well, clearly you socialized.
Samantha ain't bougie like that.
No.
Socialized Samantha really well then. Mm. That Samantha just goes up to random people.
No, but she's like, she'll go up to you, but if they try and touch her, she like backs away. Okay. She doesn't like, it's like, don't touch my hair.
But I'll come here. I'll show you, but just don't touch me.
Like, we can take a selfie together, but like, you're not like, no skin on skin contact.
See, now Michael's different. Michael will love everybody, but he doesn't.
Also, another dog.
Food.
Another dog, people. So that's my pet peeve. That's when strangers cross the boundary for me and it makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah. For me,
that's not a very good threshold, by the way, I have to say. Because, I mean, I could imagine that if that's the threshold, then if someone, like, I don't know, maybe winks at you the wrong way in traffic, it's also going to be a catastrophe. I don't know.
No, I think it's valid. I think it's really, really valid.
Thanks, Sese. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's not your dog dies.
So we know where your boundary is.
Don't say that,
Stevie.
God forbid.
Yeah. It's just one of those little pet peeves.
Do you know what? I get exactly where you're coming from. It comes back down to children. You're not going to go up to someone's child and give them a sweet.
That's my thing.
Because you're going to look like a creepy stalker.
That's my thing.
Besides that, what if I'm like banned from having sweets that day because I was naughty? Then here you come.
Casey, you know what the other thing is? Is that like, have you ever tried to offer somebody else food? Like, I'm quite a generous person like that.
Yeah, I think you're trying to give them diseases.
I actually overstep the boundaries sometimes.
No, but it's humans. Look, man, I can say no if you offer me food.
But like, if a person offers you food, a lot of people, if a stranger offered you food, you'd be like, no thank you, you know? So why would you think it'd be okay to offer it to a dog that you don't know?
Like, we're humans. Like, if I'm...
Yes, but I'm saying...
I'm like, no.
You're not comfortable eating from a person that you don't know. Although us entertainment people, we eat food from people we don't know all the time at events. They'll come up to you and be like, would you like this bacon-wrapped morsel? And you'd be like, yes, please, I'll have three.
I got to tell you, this is an interesting conversation because I've never had a conversation like this in my life before.
Stick around. We'll show you. We'll teach you a couple of things.
So Stevie, that's your boundary. Yes. Sese, what is yours?
Touching my hair or my face. So if I'm going to an event, right, like I'll have like proper face beat. So someone comes in, they do my makeup, whatever. And I go to the event and like I get there and someone's like, oh my gosh, what blush is that? Oh my gosh, is this concealer here? Then they proceed to touch the face.
And then you have a hole in your makeup.
No, besides that, like I'm cringing. Like, oh my God, did you wash your hands? Like now I'm going to get like pimples there. Like, I don't know. Don't touch my face.
That is weird though. I don't know why people would do that.
Or when they hug you, like hug me or whatever. But like, do not bring back your arms and like, touch my face. Touch my face.
When people like bring it back around your hair and like touch your
face.
Jawline.
Oh my gosh.
Unless it's your grandmother.
No, my grandmother can do whatever the hell she wants to do. She raised me.
We're talking about strangers.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah. No.
But it's a big thing, I think, among girls is like touching other girls' hair.
Yeah.
Like, but, and you know, for like the white girls that have never seen an afro in their life and they're like, oh my God, can I touch it? And you're like, no, you cannot touch it.
Yeah.
I imagine that's the same for bald men.
Probably.
Hmm. No, but a lot of the times if you go into rural areas and if you go to like schools and stuff, a lot of the, I had to get over that very quickly because if you volunteer and stuff, the kids always want to touch your hair because for them, our hair is so different and that's something that they love to do.
But that's like, that's cool. That's not...
See, I'm fine with people touching my hair. If people touch my hair, I'm like, do you want to give me like a massage at the same time?
I just think it's very invasive if someone doesn't know you to start touching your face and your hair.
It's about the bubble.
See, I've got bad skin at the moment, so nobody's touching my face.
That's my thing. I've got bad skin all the time. Like, how you want to make it worse? No.
I don't know what the psychology is behind that, though, because I've never done it. So I'd be curious to hear from someone who does it regularly. Because for them, they'd probably take offense for you saying, I don't appreciate you doing that, because they feel like they're being...
They're being welcoming.
Yeah,
and being, you
it's
know?
An endearing quality maybe to them. But it is a weird one.
Oh, I've got another one. Personal space, which is what people don't get at the bank. Like, I'm trying to pay my bills here. I'm not trying to have your titties like up my back. Like, can you just back up a bit? I find that sometimes people don't respect your personal space and they want to talk to you and like stand right here. And I really, really hate that.
Well, listen, this happens in queues as well. I'm actually, and I'm not a confrontational person at all, but personal space is very important to me. So I usually will actually then turn around. And if the person is in the queue behind me, I'll turn around and I'm kind of just standing 45 degrees towards them because I'm like, do you want to have a conversation now? Do you not want to have a conversation? And also one tends to be annoyed in the bank as well, which is just going to make it worse. Yeah.
But on that point, like, why do people think that it's okay to speak to me in a queue? Like,
also, yeah, but like, this is old people.
Old racist white people.
Well,
wow, Stevie.
Oh, no, wait. No, I take, that back. I take that back. Borderline racist white people.
But they still did.
And then they stand there and they're like, oh, you know, the post office. Like, no. I guess it's not racist, but it kind of underlines.
I'm that person, you know. I'm a chatty person, and sometimes I'll see someone.
I always talk to people. That's why I'm going to keep quiet. I'm like,
I'm very chatty, and if I like someone, like if I see a girl and she looks so pretty and I want to talk to her, like I'll talk to her. But then obviously,
but don't talk to me to complain about how poor the service is. I know the service is bad. Like I'm in the exact same line as you are.
And I want someone to
tweet it, Snapchat it.
But those old people don't have Twitter. And I'm there like awkward now snapping. Oh gosh. Like home affairs. No, I want to talk to another human being.
Sometimes it can be, I guess it also depends on your mood. So like when I was at home affairs, it's actually great to bitch and moan with everyone else in the queue.
Because they understand.
And share stories about how you got there at 4 a.m. and you still didn't get it and it was offline. But like at a bank and that kind of thing, it's just, and I don't know why anyone's even still going into banks because I haven't been into one in a very long time.
Some companies want us to.
But it can be annoying. It's also about how you deal with it as well.
Yeah.
Tamron, you are this person though. You love making conversation in queues.
Yeah, that's what I'm like.
What do you gain from it? What have you learned?
What was the best conversation you ever had?
Yeah.
See, it's not about the conversations I ever had. It's just about like.
I bet she gets there and she tells people about herself.
No, not at all. Like, I always find out, like, about people's dramas and their life. And I don't know. I just, they always open up to me.
That's, like, my worst nightmare.
And I'm like, oh,
like, shame. Like, getting onto a plane and so I sit down next to someone and they're like, hi, so what do you do?
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, I tweet and I read my book and fuck, I don't have my earphones, so.
It depends, man. Like, some days you have a bad day and you don't want to talk to strangers. But, like, on days when I'm having a bad day and, like, someone comes up to me and says, oh my gosh, hey, how are you? Then I want to tell them like about everything, you know? Mm. So I guess it depends as well.
My mom threatens me before I walk into a shopping center or anywhere. She's like, if you speak to a stranger or anyone that you know, I'm going to leave you in the shopping center by yourself and you will not find me.
We know why Tamron is the way she is.
But I still, I like walk through and if I see someone and I'm like, hi. If I see the lady that's got her makeup looking nice,
I'm like,
if someone like, if you like buying groceries and her makeup looks really nice, I'll be like, oh, you look so pretty.
Yeah. Aww.
I will tell someone that I like their outfit though. So I'm a bit of a hypocrite.
As long as you don't pull the thing off of them.
No, like,
it's like, don't touch my shirt.
Like, people get so upset with me. Like, you know, when you go through the toll gate, I'll be like, hi, how are you? Here's my money. Hope you have a good day. And then I'll go. Like, and like people, like you can see, you know, they're like, you know, taking like, back.
People
like,
listening to this, like might think that Tamron's being like bullshitting you. She's really not. Like she really is. You think it's an act that she's putting on, but like that's just how she is.
Just interested in everybody else.
She's that stranger that oversteps boundaries.
I think
Tamron was the one touching your face.
Maybe she did. Like, I don't even know. Did you touch my face?
Probably. But at the end of the day, my thinking is, like, if someone's serving you as a waiter or something, like, I always greet them by their name. And I'll always ask them where they're from. And because at the end of the day, they're not just there to, like, serve and please you. No matter what people are doing, I sometimes feel like
I should put a name tag on. Because I know your name, but you don't know my name.
That's why I introduce myself.
Aww.
Yeah.
You know what's also sort of to add to the dimension of it is that in our South African context, we think that someone's trying to rob us.
Yes,
or we think that
like,
someone is got ulterior motives, or if someone comes up to you in the mall, you think that they're coming there to ask you for money,
or they want your number.
Yeah, so it's always like I'm always like sort of avoiding people coming up to me or whatever, or even people that are overly nice. I'm like, what's the angle here?
you need to live in the now.
No, but in our context, I think that we are a little bit shut off. I mean,
people do look at me.
We're actually trained to try and avoid people. Don't make contact with the guy on the side of the road because he's going to then come and start washing your windscreen or doing whatever.
But I mean, even going back to my clubbing days, like you can't make eye contact with a guy because then, you know, they're like, oh, great, this girl, you know, walk over. And so for me, I mean, like, I know it's different because, you know, I'm always like, because, you know, just trying to like avoid situations like that. So, I mean, I think I'm very much like, avoid eye contact. Like I said, that moment when you're like, your eyes are gazing in the room and then you meet eye contact and you're like, oh, I'm going to just look over there in this corner.
No, well, I see the guy who's at the end of our street, the robot that's always there. Yeah.
You're just peace and love, Tamarin.
Aww, I don't know. I actually like this new Tamarin. No, but this is me. I've always, like, I love strangers. Like, I've always got time for strangers. But, like, a drunk guy in a club?
No.
No. Don't even get in my space because I will cut you down. My worst is when they go, can I buy you a drink? I can afford my own. Thanks.
Look, buy me a drink, honey.
And then she takes out the ball cutter and just does the physical action. Just before we move on from the topic, I want to speak for a second about this avoiding eye contact thing or not in an events context. Because I find this all the time. That, like, sometimes I'm terrible with faces. I'm terrible with names. I don't know if I've met someone before, if I just know them because I've seen them. And then, like, I'm so nervous of, like, nodding and saying, like, hi, and then they don't know who I am. Like, it's just that's why I hate events. Because there's a whole etiquette that goes with it.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm laughing so much, but it's so true. Yeah. And you know, and especially I think in your work, when you can have a different person coming and sitting across from you every single day of the week. And so, you know, I mean, sometimes to recognize the people is really hard, but I definitely agree with you. But then also there's people that, you know, you don't want to see, you know, people that you're just like, just stay across the room.
Just walk by.
Hi, how are you? I loved your tweet today.
Yeah, I get that also.
I think if you do sort of know them.
Darren's like, there's the positive facts. By the way,
if anyone was going to be able to weigh in on events, it would be the three of you because you're out at like a lot of the events that they are.
Opening of a freaking envelope. Okay.
Like at the end of the day, like if you say hello to someone that you end up saying hello to and they're like, oh, do I know you? And they're like, no, but you look so familiar, I just thought I would say hello.
Oh, that's a good comeback, actually.
Yeah. Bam! And everyone's like, oh, hi. And then you end up having a conversation. So what do you do? What do you do? And then you make a new connection.
I'm just friendly to everyone. Like, because sometimes you don't know. I meet a lot of people every single week and I can't remember every single person. And I know that I'd feel very crap if I knew someone and they didn't greet me or didn't remember me. So I literally go around being pretentious, you know, like if you come up to me and you think I know you, I will not stop you and say, listen, actually, I don't know you because I don't want to make you feel crap. I'll have a fat chat with you. I'll go around, I'll say hi, and everyone will like leave the event and we'll all have a good time. And that's just
the other trick that I learned once is that you don't say, hi, nice to meet you. You say, how's it going?
Yeah.
Because then it's like you may or may not have known the person from before.
Oh, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, just pretend that you know them, and then if they don't know you, they feel like an asshole.
I don't have time for that.
That's not a bad one.
I'm so sorry.
But events are tricky. Events are tricky. It's a tricky space to navigate.
And then they say something, then you're like,
No, you just be like, oh just my gosh, so when was the last time we saw each other? Yeah. Oh, but you're doing so well. Tell me about your Twitter again.
Stevie, all your conversations about Twitter.
Well, listen, speaking of connections and making connections and not just somebody that you see at an event once off, Stevie, you spent the entire weekend binge watching a dating show all about connections.
Oh. So good, but also so horrendously bad. So, you know, everybody in here knows I love reality television, but I also love when good reality is really bad and it just showcases like the worst of human society. And so I started watching this show called Are You the One on MTV. We started watching it like episode 4, but we were like, this is brilliant. So we, you know, recorded the whole thing and then we finished it last night. So the premise of the show is that 20 hot young singles come together in Mexico, no, Hawaii. And,
ooh, nice.
But the thing is that they've been matched up through a matchmaking service with their perfect match before they got to the island. So you have to arrive on the island and find your perfect match. Then at the like rose ceremony or whatever it is, you stand there and then it, depending, they don't tell you who the perfect matches are, but they have lights which signal how many perfect matches there are within the group of 20 people. And so you can have 5 the 1 week and 4 the next week, but you're not going to know who those people are. So anyway, so we watched this season and it was really funny and like Americans can be really dumb. So it's very entertaining. But at the end, the point of my story is that at the end of the season, only one couple out of a possible 10 actually found each other within the kind of system. And at the end, they all found their supposed match, but they were all in love with other people, which I guess is easy to do when you're putting 20 single people, single attractive people together in a room. You know, I mean, you're talking about like 90% match versus like 95% match. But, you know, in all of these shows, their lasting relationships are so few and far between. And Elle and I were chatting about it, my husband, and I don't think that if the two of us signed up for a dating service that we would be put together because we're so different. But I mean, that's what makes it, you know, what it is. So, I mean, I don't know if you girls have ever like been with a dating site or known a girlfriend who has or, you know, knows the exception to the rule.
Well, this is when we need Michael Flax when it comes to dating websites.
Even though he's locked down now. In
But he was like the local expert on, what's that thing called? Tinder.
Oh, wow.
But Kat's pretty like active on Tinder. She swipes left for most of the people.
Where is she though? She's gone.
She's hiding.
Oh, there she is.
She's hiding. Oh, she doesn't want to be a part of this conversation.
Producer Kat, how's the Tinder thing working out for you?
Not so good.
Oh, no. How many months have you been on it for now?
It's on and off maybe for like 8 months. I don't know.
Have you ever been to at least one date?
But no. Wait, what about this, Kat? Even
she's
though
fussy.
I've just said that like the whole matchmaking thing is a farce and doesn't work or works 10% of the time, what about signing up to an actual dating service?
I've thought about that, but the ones they have in SA are like kind of dodgy. I don't really trust people. So... yeah.
That's one thing you're going to have to work on if you're going to start dating.
But I mean, there are so many things that make a relationship.
I'll just have Cameron hook me up on a blind date. Let's just do that.
Oh, let's decode though for a second.
I don't know if I've got nice, decent people.
I've got some people, but I don't know if you're going to like them because apparently you're fussy.
Just hook up, Jesse. We'll see.
Make a plan.
I'll make a plan for
let's define for a second though what the perfect match is. Like, what does that actually mean? How do you know that you've met the perfect match? What is that? What are we speaking about when we're even saying that?
I think that the what's the name of the show again?
Are You the One?
Are You the One? Same as The Bachelor, same as all the other dating shows. When you want to match make someone, you're using something that's on paper, right? And what might look good on paper doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate to what might look good in person. So just because, you know, like, you'll match up a lawyer with like an engineer because you're assuming that they are like ambitious people and they will, you know, prosper to make like, I don't know, like a lasting legacy.
Yeah, but it's also like, it's like, what kind of people do you like? What do you like to do for fun? And I was like, oh my gosh, I just have like anxiety attacks about, oh, I forgot to put that down, or oh, I really hate it when people do that, you know, and like one tiny little thing like that in an environment like that show.
And sometimes we like people for different reasons. Like, look at my exes. The one guy I liked because he was hot. The other guy I liked because he was smart. The other guy was really funny. The other guy was this and that. So there isn't like one thing. There isn't like one prototype that I like, you know. So one person could come along and I like something completely different about them. So you can't dictate what people want, or you can't actually try and fixate what people like and what's going to last. You know what I mean? So I think that it don't work because relationships and humans, you can't like bolt down to what looks good on paper.
I also think that the sentences that start with, well, my perfect type of guy are always doomed for failure because
there is
the
no
moment
perfect guy.
Exactly. But also, you know, I think that humans are flawed, and you know, you can think that you like this type of person, but then the complete opposite comes around and you just click and you find your soulmate.
So how do they then, so what happens at the end of the show? Do you win money if you found the person who's the matchmaker?
But they had to get, they had to get 10 perfect match. So they each had to find their perfect match on the show and then they won money. But they had like, it was like $1 million split between 20 people.
So they're basically saying that the matchmaker's then the be all and end all. And that if you follow through with that, you see, but that's a bit of a judgment to make.
You see, they're saying, because they're saying that these people have been unlucky in love before. And so that's like,
that they, makes the whole world.
They're looking for things that they want, whereas they should be looking for things that they need. So they're people that would complement their like personalities. And so, I mean, in terms of Alistair and I,
because we have a perfect couple.
Oh my God. Not. No, so, I mean, like, we're very different, the two of us, you know, in all different, but, like, we're different at different times as well. Mm. I think that's the thing, because when people think, oh, I want someone who's really lively and, like, outgoing and, like, life of the party, but people aren't like that all the time, you know? So, you have, I mean, it's a tricky science.
I don't think it is a science. Yeah.
I think it's just who you match with, because sometimes people want exact same, and that's when they go and find that person and they realize that it's not what they want. Mm. Like Rassie and I are so different. Like he's completely like work orientated, whereas I'm very like happy.
So I have a question for both of you.
I don't have a Rassie or an Al, so I can't.
No, I want to ask
Mang Mang and I.
Has your perfect man that you dreamt about when you were like 16, 17, 18, has that changed from the perfect man or woman that you imagine today?
Yes, completely. Because I'm not one person in every stage of my life. Because obviously, like when you grow into different things, like into different, I don't know, behaviors, and you discover things about yourself. So what I may have wanted when I was 12 is not necessarily what I want right now. And also, like when you start dating, the things that you pick up in the dating world as well, you're like, wait a minute, maybe that's not what I wanted. So definitely, I mean, I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. So obviously, I won't want the same things that I want now.
I think the question's flawed, though, because there's no such thing as perfect.
Yeah.
So it's,
firstly, we're not perfect.
Yeah, no one's... this word perfect, actually, in the context of relationships and that, I think needs to go first of all. I mean, I don't know what kind of conditioning you do when you read your kid at the age of 6 just before they go to sleep at night. I don't know, Rapunzel or Cinderella or whatever these things are.
Prince Charming.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of conditioning you do to a kid. Because I think it makes life harder when you grow up and are confronted by the fact that perfection is actually the imperfection of human beings. So I don't know. Tamron, what do you think?
I'm with you, Ari. I think if I look back at when I was younger, I was like, oh, I'm going to be married by when I'm 21 and I want this and I want kids. And then I got to 21 and I was like,
You're still a child yourself.
Now I'm at 28 and I'm like,
It's not the fairy tale that they preached to you when you were like, but it's a better fairy tale. It's a doper fairy tale because it's your personal story and your narrative.
I'm
27 now. I didn't think that I would feel like this at 27. I felt like I always thought, you know,
you'd be older.
You're a grown up now. And I'm like, what? They're letting me drive a car? Sweet. I still think that sometimes. Like, how awesome.
I mean, I had an entire plan, you know, like at 27.
Oh my God, this
I've
is getting married. Very,
but you do. You have those plans. Yeah.
I had a lot of books.
Yes. I was exactly the same. You know, I thought, you know, when I'm 26, I want to be married. When I'm 27,
mine was 27.
Yeah.
And now I'm 26, and it's like, oh my God, you have 1 year.
Yeah.
Make it work. Make it count.
Do boys have those kind of... I don't think that they do. They don't plan their weddings.
Not on this extent. I mean, I will always stand by the fact that when I was a kid, I used to look at like adult relationships and that, or watch TV shows and think like, these people have made it so complicated. Like, I have a very specific idea of what my life is going to be. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to have a white picket fence. Like, all of that stuff. And then life happens and it starts to, I find that the older I get, the more complicated life becomes. The more you realize that there are so many intricacies to human beings. There's so many layers. There's so many levels. No one really knows what's going on. Everything. Yeah. It's a complete mindfuck. So it's true. Yeah, it's just life becomes a little bit more complicated, but in a good way, as long as you embrace it.
Yeah.
I'm also finding that a lot of my friends have been together since, they've been dating since high school or varsity or, you know, and then they kind of, if they break up, and they're kind of like, whoa, I don't know how to do this, you know, and they almost like really struggle to get back into it because I think... Okay, now this is just something that like I'm speaking as I'm thinking, but you know, maybe it's that when you have a relationship that you kind of take with you from your teenage years through to your varsity years, you know, maybe you're still dating them and then you break up just as you're entering the workforce. I mean, those are like seriously formative years. Mm. And you know, all of your peers who weren't in relationships like that, they're, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ahead of you in terms of like dating maturity or experience.
But what does ahead mean? Mm. Like,
but and then yeah. Is that positive or negative? Because, you know, I mean, you could come into it all doe-eyed and, you know, positive, whereas someone who's, you know, been dating for 5 years.
I don't think we can compare like the dating world, you know. You can't take someone that's been together for 5 years and try and compare them to, I don't know, my 3-month relationship, because we're 4 different people, you know. And our
No, I'm saying like when you come out of it,
okay,
like when you come out of it and you try and start dating again,
yeah,
like almost like who's better off, I guess. Maybe that's the case. Like, are you a better dater if you are a serial dater, or are you like, because I'm sure that you wouldn't be a very good dater if you'd been in a relationship, but maybe. Like, poor daters are the ones you want to
be in relationships with.
I agree with Stevie there, because I think a lot of the times guys see a girl that's just come out of a long-term relationship and they're like, oh, she's too serious. No, 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 she's scary. But at the same time, that's a girl who might end up being the one who makes you happy at the end
of the day. And dating is to find relationships, right?
Yeah. But sometimes in this world, it's about having sex.
I want to go back to something that you were speaking about though earlier, which is guys being a little bit more conscious of how their lives are rolling out versus girls. Mm. So obviously women have a very specific idea of what their life is and that kind of thing. And I don't always understand it. So when I have friends who are like 26, 27, who are women, who say to me like, I should have been married by now. I should have had this. And I can see that it's a huge thing for them. Mm. What is the difference? Because I don't feel that at all. What's going on there? Why do women take it so much more seriously, this idea of 26 is that, 27 is that, 28 is that? Because you almost, and even the tone of the conversation we were having, is that there's this implied failure if X hasn't happened by a certain age or whatever.
It's because like our lives are run by time, if I can put it that way. Because if you don't have kids by a certain time, it means that like you might never ever have to like have kids ever. So then you need to plan to get married so that you can have kids. But then also, marriage is not up to us the entire time. You know what I mean? A man still has to propose to you. So when you have planned that by 26 you'd like to get married to kind of chase your biological clock, and no guy proposes to you or there is no serious relationship, it's like, oh my God, am I going to get married? Will I have kids? It's the time factor of when you're supposed to start a family and when your time to start a family is going to run out. That's how we feel and that's what we think. Or am I wrong?
No, but yeah, I wonder if it's not like an internal, you know, difference between men and women, because I find, you know, Al and I we had a year that we were going to start trying for kids, and the year got closer and closer and I started freaking out about it. I mean, it was still like 2 years away, but I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And he's like, oh, it's 2 years time. I'm like, that's 2 years. You know, I think that maybe, I'm just throwing this out there, tell me if I'm wrong, like men don't think about time the same way as women do.
Or men are just a lot more self-centered than what women are, because women are thinking of family, they're thinking about other people, they're thinking about
the man.
They're
thinking about their own careers because they want to get to a point where they can take, you know, 3
and
or 4 months off.
That's another thing, the time factor. You need to be able to go back to work. You need to know, am I going to work for myself? Mm. Can I afford to have kids? Because essentially we carry the kids. So for the man, there's no time element, because you decide when to get married, you decide when to have kids, you decide when to settle down. We can't choose that, because we need you to take initiative, because I can't go up to a guy and
I don't know if I hear you, but I think that's going a bit far, like saying that women don't have control in it.
I think in this day and age,
so much more, but
society,
I do get what you're saying.
But society deems it more okay when the guy proposes. Like, you should see the smack girls get when they go up to a guy and they propose or like initiate marriage. Or
no, it's true.
Yeah.
And there's something else that I've noticed a lot on this show that I was watching is the way that women would say, like, be a man. Like, be a man.
Yeah, step up and marry me.
But no, but like for me, like I think that is the most disgusting thing that you can say to your partner is like, be a man, be a woman. It's like, no, I'm not going to follow your heteronormative gender stereotype over here. I'm going to be the person that I want to be. Like, you can tell me to grow up. You can tell me to be an adult. You can tell me to take the situation seriously, but I'm not going to like conform to some like archaic idea of what you think I should be.
I agree with that. Yeah. And that's something that causes a lot of issues in relationships is when people think that you have to be a certain way because that's how society deems women to be. I mean, the industry that we're all in, people don't understand it. Someone that works a 9-to-5 sometimes looks at us and goes, you're so unambitious. And I'm like, buddy, I have to work 10 times harder than you do. Yes, I might be sitting at home in front of my laptop.
Yeah.
But it's not easy getting told no in your face as often as we get told. You get told no like maybe once a month, once a week, maybe.
Or, you know, every time you're looking for a new job. Yeah. We're always looking for a new job.
Yeah. Which is like every day, every single hour, we busy constantly brainstorming and people don't realize the criticism and the shit that we go through. And they think that, oh, no, you know what? It's such an easy life. And you're like, no, actually, you think it looks nice because that's what we portray on our Instagram accounts.
But actually...
But come spend a day in our shoes and actually have to get the rejection that you get so often. It's not that nice. And it just like irritates me that people demean us a lot of the times and just because... And then they think that because we're in this industry or you're a woman or you want to have kids or this or whatever, people think that they can have a say over your life. At the end of the day, fuck off, it's my life.
But Ari, like, I want to ask you, like, I back to our point, I have some guy friends who are, like, my age and older, who are single, that are struggling to find a girl, and I feel like they are feeling that pressure as well. So, I mean, I don't know if it's that, you know, my group, like, our group of friends are just, you know, I don't know, more equal, whatever it is, but, like... I don't think it's only the girls that are feeling it. And it's maybe just that the guys aren't being honest with their friends.
I think that it's definitely women that I do think take it a little bit more seriously.
For sure.
And a little bit harder. Again, it's difficult to paint everyone sort of with the same brush. Because it depends on what your objectives are. So maybe you are 100% invested in what your career is. And that's the most important thing to you. And so that's sort of, you know, gets to the forefront of it. A lot of it, and we didn't even touch on this, also has to do with families and traditions and cultures. I mean, it goes back to like, I don't know, if you are, I mean, in some cultures and that kind of thing, you have to get married to someone you don't even know. You meet them when you're halfway down the aisle. There's all those perceptions and things that come into it. But I do think that the most important thing is to have an individual stance on it. And I genuinely do feel really bad for when I see someone who's like 26, 27 or whatever, who is carrying this burden of, I should have had this by this age.
Yeah.
In that sort of sentence, in that realm of, I should have had a kid or I should have had a this or whatever it was.
Because it's not even their own
car or whatever people think.
I don't necessarily get that in terms of, I feel like, I mean, well, my views on having a child and that is also like the most, it's one of the most self-indulgent things you can do because you're saying that I'm so awesome, I should bring other things into the world.
Some people don't view it that
I don't way. Ever I think that the, one of the worst things that can happen is that you, if you are 26, 27 and you feel like, no, I need to have a child by this age, and then you go and have one and then you didn't want that the child in the first place, that's also like a, that's disastrous.
Or I can't take care of the child, you know, that's my thing, you know, I could have a kid right now, it's not like that I can't, I can, but then what?
And if you're doing it for the pressure of society, that's a problem. Yeah. If you're having a child because society says that by 25 you need to have a child behind a picket fence, that's really like not a good situation.
But I mean, the world is changing so much, and you know, you look at I look at my contemporaries, and you know, they're as you say, like struggling with careers, they're struggling trying to find their partner, they're wanting to travel, they're, you know, wanting to buy a car. There's so many things that come into this, and it's not as simple as it was for our parents.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I want to say, like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't our parents, but it was our parents. Like, our parents sitting around this table, if you are between the ages of like 25 and 30, your parents were of the generation where, you know, they got married at, you know, my mom was married at 24. She had me at 25, you know, and she wasn't, that wasn't considered young. It wasn't, you know.
Dude, like, my mom met my dad at 22. She hadn't been dating since then. She got married at 25 and had me at 27. Like, and that was her life. My grand, before my mom, had an arranged marriage. She married my grandfather, who was like 12 years older than her. So that was an arranged situation. She was married at, 21? Started having kids at 22. And, like, it's different. It's a very different generation.
I think we have so much more...
to learn.
No, we have so much more options as a generation.
Which is harder.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, all that pressure.
Look, we're just about out of time. But on that note, there is a fact that I thought was really interesting. So millennials is Generation Y, people born towards the end of the... So people born in the 80s. So, like, you sort of half had technology, half didn't. So Generation Z is...
people who grew up with Segas.
Yeah. The generation that comes after us is Generation Z. So those are like the 13, 14-year-olds. And studies have shown that those 13, 14-year-olds are going to be our landlords, because we are so non-committal as a generation and so late in doing anything, whether it's buying a house, settling on a career, because there were so many options, that there's going to be a regression towards putting a little bit more structure in place in your life, that we will actually land up renting places to live from Generation Z, because they will have seen from us that you cannot take so long to make decisions.
I swear. And I read an article that said that because our parents were the baby boomers, like, the baby boomers just said, you need to get a career, you need to get a house, you need to get a family, you need to get a job, like, you need to support yourself and make money to be successful in this world. And so because they were then our parents were like, oh, well, we're successful, so now, you know, you can be whatever you want to be, because success comes easily, you just have to work hard. And so because the Y generation has been told that they're so wonderful and they're so talented and they can be anything that they want to be, you have a generation of people who can't do anything.
Yeah. Except sit around and talk for 40 minutes.
And tweet.
Which is exactly what we've done, and we've done a very good job of it.
Thank you very much.
Let's go around the room, how to keep up with everyone all day. And final words as well.
This conversation really entertained me. You guys will probably figure it out soon. But I'm at Tamarin_Jardine on Twitter, at Tamarin Jardine on Instagram and Facebook.
At Stevie French SA, just do you. Like, don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Do what makes you happy. Follow your own path.
At Sesetetu on Twitter, Sesetetu on Snapchat and Facebook. I've got a lot to say, but I'll sum it down. To women, there is no pressure. You know, this is the new generation. Do you live your life and, you know, embrace it? And also, we're tired of the political antics. We just want a South Africa that works. And lastly, let's go out there, get some money. Like, recession is closing in. Be great, guys.
Power. There you go. That's the ladies' round table. Tamarin, you look like you got one more thing you want
to
say.
She's like laughing. I'm trying not to look at Tamarin.
Because every single time you like last thoughts, and she's just like, I've got a paragraph.
Okay. Last thought. Yeah. I've just seen Cece's tweet where I had my CC selfie at Stevie French SA. It happens every Tuesday.
Yeah.
And she quoted it and said, I'm so fat, crying faces, many crying, sad, teary faces.
Yeah.
Girl, you know what? Would you speak to me like that?
Like what?
Would you say I'm so fat? Then why would you say it to yourself? Drops mic.
Sure, we'll pick up on this conversation next Tuesday.
I'm so overwhelmed.
Just after 4:15, that there is the LRT. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.